Welcome to Functional Design and Closure. I'm Christoph Newman.
And I am Nate Jones.
We're here to help you use closure and functional programming to make your everyday life as a developer less frustrating and more fulfilling.
Absolutely. Welcome to the show. Are you new here? Go back to episode one. This is episode 117. So we've been around a while. So go to closuredesign.club, see all the series that we've done. We like to organize our episodes into series. And so right now we're in the middle of what we call our reentrant coding series. So if you're new to this series, you can go back to episode 114, so just a few ago. And that's how you can get started into this. So the point of this series, we're kind of talking about getting back into, so reentering a code base. We're getting back into it. Or for me, it was all about getting into it. You know, I kind of joined a big code base a few years ago. And so I feel like I've been learning ever since. And so that's how do you know what the lay of the land is? That's kind of the point.
That's right. And recently, I dove back into a code base I hadn't looked at for well over a year, at least 14 months. And I was a little worried. How was this going to go? And I was very pleased to find that I left myself a whole trail of crumbs all throughout the code base everywhere. And so that's what inspired this series. How can you make it easy to dive back into code or to get into code in the first place?
Yeah.
Even when you're looking at that code with fresh eyes, even though you wrote some of it.
Yes, you are the problem. I mean, you are the predecessor. So the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the overall structure of the code, kind of what's the gateway? How do you get into even trying to understand it? And, you know, that was all about the main function or the main area in ClojureScript, because there's no main function in ClojureScript.
Yes. Start with main, right? And have a main in the first place. Don't have 1,000 little mains.
Yes. The main way to understand everything. So, but I think what we want to do is want to shift into talking about what's at the heart of the application. So what is the core? What is the thing that beats in the middle that, well, that really is the point of why your application exists in the first place, you know? What's core to your application? What's core to the, yeah, I don't know, the business that you're running here? What's the core logic there? And what do we call that?
Yes, it's functional programming. So we're talking about pure data models. That is our core business logic, right?
So what is a pure model?
Yeah, if you're around in functional programming circles and closure circles, you hear about pure data models all the time, especially if you're in functional programming circles that have immutable data, right? And mm-hmm. So we're a closure podcast, so we're going to take the closure spin on it. So it, in a way, a pure data model is simple and yet complex. It's simple because a pure model is just simply pure data plus functions to work with that pure data, and they're pure functions. So pure data and pure functions together, their powers combined, right? No side effects. But it's complicated because it's the core of your business. So they can be very elaborate, so long as there's no side effects. That's the goal.
Yeah, I've never really liked the name pure, because it feels like it's a bit of a moral judgment on the code. You have the pure code here, and then all the other stuff is the impure code, you know. But
yes,
anyway.
Yes.
But I think, you know, I mean, we already have a whole set of closure functions to operate on data. Why would we have data that's associated with this bit of data? Like, why would we have functions that are associated with just this pure data? And the reason why is because you want to name the operations and the predicates and all those other things that you want to do with this data. You want to name them in a way that you as a human understand. Because the point of this series is, how do you understand the code? And so if there's a blob of data there, you know, it's a map with 18 keys, you're like, well, that's awesome. I love maps and pure data. It can't hurt me, right? We've all talked about how data can't hurt you. But then what do you want?
Yes.
You know, the whole point of an application is to actually take data and move it and make it, you know, transform it into other data or send it off other places, that kind of stuff. And so those functions are high level vocabulary that you can use to think about your core model. So these are business level functions. These are super important, serious functions.
Yeah, serious, very, very serious functions. And so the analog over in object-oriented programming is you would have some class and you're after some cohesiveness in this class, and you have these methods and they examine and manipulate your data members. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of this cohesive model. But here it's closure, it's functional programming. We don't like side effects. So we have to define some kind of like data information structure, which is going to be an immutable data structure, and a set of functions that operate on those. And those functions, because it's immutable data, they cannot update that tree. They can't change things in place. They always have to return a new version of it. So at a basic level, you have functions that take the data tree. And I'm just going to say tree. It could be as simple as a map, or it could be as simple as a vector with a few things in it. But often these models turn into maps within maps and things like that. So they take the data tree and they do something with it, and they give you a new data tree if you're updating in time. Or they take the data tree and they find some things, and then they give you the things that you were looking for and things like that, right? So that's what we mean when we say a pure data model. It's simple, but yet it's complicated. Right? And so because they're cohesive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so because they're cohesive, we want to keep these things together, right? So how do you organize them? How do you keep all this stuff together? How do you find it? You know, we don't have like our big fat IDE forcing us to come up with file names that match our class names and put them in a rigid place. So I don't know, Nate, how do you organize them?
It's good, I think, to put each model and its functions, or sort of speak of the data and its functions, in a namespace. Well, you don't put the data in the namespace necessarily, but you keep the either the initial data or whatever you start with in all together in a namespace. In Clojure, we map namespaces to files. So we like having like it's like app.model.model name. So it's nice because you could just go into the app.model folder and ls, and you can see all of the core models for the whole application. And so since you have these models in their own files, then any part of your application can include that namespace and has access to all the functions that can use returns from that data, or query that data, or do anything that we need to do for the purpose of the application.
Right.
So that's kind of where we put them in a file.
Right. So each model is in its own file. You put the schema in that file that defines, mm-hmm. What's valid. Put some kind of constructor function. We like to call it init. And so it gives you the initial version of that model. Maybe it takes some arguments if there's some things you want to put in that initial version, right? But it's cohesive. It's all in one file. And then in this model folder, this model directory where you put all your data models, they're a resource to the entire application. So anything that has to work with that data model can just require the data models that it uses. And over in object-oriented land, people get really worried about dependencies. And the reason why you get really worried about dependencies is all these objects can be mutated. So your class definition is like, well, which class is using which class? And I don't want the class to require the class. I want the class to require an implementation. Not the implementation. I want the opposite, to use the interface and have dependency injection. Put it in because, I want to control things, et cetera, et cetera. In this case, it's a pure data model. There's nothing that can be altered. So the functions are the interface, right? All you can do is call functions with pure data and get pure data back. You can't mess anything up other than for your own copy. And so you can just have a big pool of these files that each are a cohesive data model. And they're now a resource to the whole application. So anything that needs to work with that data model will require it and then have all the functions at hand to work with it.
Yeah, it's an interesting that you bring up object-oriented, because the idea, like one of the things that is good to have all the models at kind of a flat level like that is you can actually have higher level models that include other models as subparts of them. You know, you can even have a model that uses your entire application. We don't generally tend to do that, but you can. And in object-oriented land, if you have an object that has other objects in it, you know, you have a lot of nesting, you could end up getting to the point where you don't know where your outer level function call is, what is actually mutating underneath the hood. But with pure models, there's no surprise. You'll get a new version, and so you have the old version of the data, you know, new version of the data, and there's no problem that it might end up causing and accidentally stumbling into some side effect, because all it's supposed to do is change data.
Yeah, it's a good point that in OO, the larger these object trees get, the more risk there is, right? Mm-hmm. Because any piece of code can just traverse using dots, you know, dot this, dot that, dot the other, and then call some function that mutates. And so so now some new piece of code in the entire code base that had access to this giant tree of objects can mess it up for everything else that's there. But this is why we can have something even as large as a application state, the entire state in one tree, is because it's immutable data. So none of the code can mess it up for any of the other code. It can only call functions that mess with that tree and give it a new version. So you can only mess it up for yourself.
And I think that gets back to the whole, again, the point of this series is understanding the code. If a function can only, the only thing that will happen when you call this function is that it'll give you data back, there's never going to be any danger that you're going to accidentally do something else. And what it does is it makes the mental load for you, the developer, lower. And that's the whole point. Like you talked about risk as far as like, oops, I might accidentally do something. But risk has the other side of risk is cognitive load when you're developing. And pure models lower your cognitive load. And the lower the load is, the higher amount of the larger amount of your brain can focus on the actual problem. That's what we want.
Yeah, you can read the code and take it at base value.
Yeah,
because the function is 100% deterministic by its inputs if it's a pure function. So you don't have to wonder what else is happening other than what it gives you back as a result, right? Nothing strikes terror into my heart as much as a void function in Java, right? Especially if it takes a lot of arguments and you're like, what is happening and where is it happening? Because now you have to be able to reason about all the implementation details behind that little curtain called the function call, right? What is happening behind that curtain? You know, because it didn't give me anything back, so it must have done something. And so from a understanding the code base point of view, you can reason about these things. But then also, because this model directory, it's an inventory of the most important things in this entire application. Here are all the things that matter. As much code as possible should be in these pure models. So you can look through and go, okay, what is all the information that this application has around, and begin to understand it and go off and look at the unit tests for each of these pure models to kind of understand how this application reasons, how it represents things. It's the very essence of the application.
Absolutely. That's why we call it the heart of the application. You know, as you move throughout the application, you should be seeing imports or requires, of these namespaces all over the place, because that's how your application actually makes decisions and that kind of thing. You know, how it gets things done, you know, the IO, that's separate. But the important about what you need to do is in those models. So then I think that gets a good segue. So how do they fit into the rest of the application? We talked about importing them or requiring them, but how are they used by the other parts of the application?
Right, because the pure models, they can't have side effects. And applications, as we've said many times, without any side effects, all the computer is going to do is just sit there keeping itself warm, right? You got to have some I/O at some point in time. And so you need, and this gets back into what we talked to you about the last couple of weeks, you need components that are responsible on the edges, and then kind of components in the middle. And so you have your I/O components on the edges, and then you have some kind of component that is going to use this pure model in order to get work done.
Yeah, so it's like we talk about, you know, or there's a lot of times in functional communities we say keeping I/O at the edges. And so you imagine one of these components is like a bowl, and there's, if you're going across it, at the first edge there's I/O, and in the middle is the pure, you know, pure model goodness, and then on the other side is I/O again. And so these components kind of tie those things together. They do a little bit of I/O, but spend most of the time in the pure code, and then they do the whatever it needs to do out on the outside, which is serialize a web request or write to a WebSocket, or, you know, there's plenty of things, write to a database. There's plenty of things you can do on that side. And so I think it'd be good to see, like, so what are some good examples of these kind of components to kind of, you know, give some concrete things to talk about?
Yeah. So at a simple level, you could have a component that just simply reads lines out of a file, and then uses a pure reducing function in order to process those lines and maybe build up a state or a summary or whatever information it's looking for as it gets each line, and there's this pure state. And so you have the pure state of whatever it's tracking across all those lines. Mm-hmm. And so then the pure reducing function just gets fed a line, a line, a line, a line, and then it builds up that state. And then when the reduction is over, then you have whatever it is you wanted to aggregate across those lines. And so you still have the same pattern. You have the code that has to do the I/O, and then it has to kind of create an initial instance of this pure data model. Mm-hmm. And then it is going to use the reducing function of this pure data model and feed it the initial state, and then it's going to get the final state out. And then it's going to take that, and it's going to write out a summary or a report or send it, you know, whatever it's going to do. So even at this very simple level, you have that piece of the component, which is the state holder that's doing the I/O, but utilizing the pure model for the hard work in the middle.
Yeah, definitely. I think we talked about that, and there was a series that we did all about, you know, tracking time in a file, and that was a good example of exactly what you're talking about. More just the pure middle, but you can imagine an application that would do both sides of that. It would read the file, do the pure stuff, and write out a summary. Even if write a summary is println. Println is I/O, of course. I think one of the examples I like is you know, web requests. You know, almost all applications have a component that handles the web requests, and so you don't really often think about, you know, deserializing and everything on the way in to a web request as I/O, but it really is. It's all based on getting information out of memory and putting it in a closure map and that kind of stuff. And then usually in the handler at the top of it is, you know, you got the request. And then usually you need to do like some database operation or something. You gotta go fetch some information that you want to have also as input. Then you turn towards your pure state, your pure model. You know what the application or what it's usually in an atom, because you have to, you know, you want to be able to hold on to it between requests. So you can't just, you know, load out of the database itself, I guess. And you take that pure data, you take the information you got from the web request or from the database or other places, you call one of those pure functions to get a new version of that state, you put it back in the state atom, and then you take whatever you need to do, either that's, you know, making another database call to save something, but then the final thing is serializing the request to go back to the browser, you know, with hopefully a 200 error result code.
Yeah. We like 200 okay.
Yeah. So that function ends up being, you know, there's IO at the top of the function, there's IO at the bottom of the function, but the middle, you know, those are your edges that we're talking about. And so you can see from the top of the that function to the bottom of the function, the bottom of the handler, all of the stuff that and none of the IO is hidden. And that's kind of the best part, is because the IO isn't hidden somewhere behind some of those functions, behind those pure functions. It's, again, it's easier to understand. Cognitive load is lower, and you're able to read the code again and understand it when you get back into it. You need to fix a bug.
Right. And even the code that can take a row, one of those row results from the database, and handle it in some way, that can be pure, right? And so, mm-hmm. so that can be a pure model where the data is reflective of something that you would get as a row result out of the database. So it might look very much like a set of fields and things like that. And then you could take your pure model and turn it into a row to reinsert, right? So you still have the pure model in the middle in all these cases. And so then maybe as a final example, consider something like a stream consumer. Mm. So a Kafka stream consumer. And so it has to basically sit there and wait for an event or a message to show up. So it could once again have a state atom, and the contents of that atom are a pure data model. And then some message shows up because it has to be reactive. And so then it's going to use that pure model to update the state that's sitting in the atom based on whatever the message came up with. So you might have a reducing function in this pure model that can just take every kind of event that it knows about coming from this topic and update the state appropriately. And then after you call swap, it gives you the new state of this. And then it can go, oh, okay, now that I have this new information based on that message, I'm going to send that off to some core async listener or write it out to a file, whatever, put it in some other Kafka topic. So it's the same thing, right? It's like your pure model is doing the bulk of the work. And then the component holds the state, and it just has the IO, you know, tooling around it to get the data in and out.
Yeah, and so the more you write these kind of functions, the more you start to recognize them in the code, and you look for that pattern. And so all of these integration level components end up having a lot of functions that look like this. And so because of that, the application ends up being a lot flatter. It's not, you know, calls a function, calls a function, calls a function, calls a function, IO. No, it dips a little into the IO. It does a deep trip into the pure model, because that's where all your hard work is, or all your hard decisions are. And then it does another little dip into the IO at the end. And so your application ends up being shallower. And again, sound like a little bit of a broken record here, but the shallower your code is, your call trees are, the easier it is to understand. And so by formatting things this way, you make it so that the code is easier to understand when you come back to it.
Yeah. And conversely, then for the pure models, you don't have to worry about deeper call stacks in the pure models because everything is pure.
Exactly.
So where there are side effects, you want very, very, very shallow call stacks. And where there are not side effects, and you can unit test these things very thoroughly, you don't have to worry about the call stack as much.
So I hope that has been an understanding that leveling up for you on the whole idea of pure models. So we had fun with that. What do you think, Christoph?
Yeah, I love talking about pure models. I could just talk and talk and talk about them. In fact, we're just going to have to come back next week and talk about them some more.
Yeah.
Because they really are the heart. They really are the heart of a functional program, the heart of a closure program, for sure. But you can talk with us if you send us a tweet on X at Closure Design, or an email to feedback@closuredesign.club. Or one of the most interactive ways to talk to us is to just hop into the Closure Design Dash podcast channel on the Closurian Slack and chat with us there.
Absolutely. Yes, we've talked lots about pure models over the course of our podcast episodes, which I say we have hundreds, or 100 of them. So yeah, go check those out on closuredesign.club. You can see all the show, all the past episodes and show notes.
That's right. That's going to be it for this week, but we'll be back next week with even more about Pure Models. Thanks for listening.